That's what the
Hey, I'm Tarek. I'm at it.
Hi, Tarek.
All right, so we're going to be moving into step five. And for step five, we have Nathan and Hunter. I'll turn it over to them.
Thanks, Tarek. I'm Nathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Nathan.
If y'all would indulge me just a little experiment that I've been running. Casey, can I get you?
Absolutely.
And Will, can I get you? Cody, can I get you?
Sure.
Would any ladies like to volunteer?
I don't volunteer.
It looks like you were forced into it. All right, here we go. If y'all would come up here and stand up here real quick. And I want you to hold your, whatever your strongest hand is, your bicep.
I don't have one of those.
Well, I want you to hold it like this. Whichever one's your strongest. All I'm going to do with this little experiment is say one word before I try to push your hand down, and all your job is to do is to hold it up. Okay, you ready? Don't hold it like that. Cheat. Just right. Okay. Ready? And I'm just gonna randomly pick. Ready? Fear. Love. Did I push weaker then?
No.
Okay. Love. Okay. I mean, I'm a big guy. Okay, ready? Ready? Fear. Fear. Love. All right. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Love. Fear. All right.
Ooh.
That's it. I hope I didn't just hurt you, Will. I heard a pop. All right. Now, look. I saw that on some, you know, woo-woo documentary I was watching earlier this week. And I thought, I got to try that when we show up on Saturday. I've done that now with 26 people, including myself. Every single time, it's the same thing. It's the same exact thing. Some people talk about unconscious mind or spirit or Allah or whatever it is, right, that is God. But I am convinced that when, you know, we talk about this simple program and all this, it comes down to fear and love. It always comes down to fear and love. Brandon and Megan did such a good job of talking through each of the kinds of inventories that you do. Resentment, anger, if I dig deep enough, the anger has got fear underneath it, right? And then if I'm, you know, one of those like scared of clown things, scared of sharks. That's saw Jaws. I didn't even see Jaws. When I was a kid, I just saw the cartoon. That was enough to freak me out, right? And then usually, almost always in my sexual relations, there's a good element of a fear and insecurity that's been going on ever since I was young. Right? So, for me, all the steps are wonderful and beautiful, and yet they have to be tied together. But this is where you've come to the fifth step. You've really done a lot of work, and you do have a lot of self-knowledge, like Brandon and Megan were talking about. Well, we got to get rid of that shit. Right? I mean, the graphic kind of picture that I give is you think of those, I don't know if anybody ever does this, where you see the videos of like popping big cysts and pimples and stuff like that. There's something really relieving about that if you ever do that. But the fourth step is about as big as that boil is going to be. Right? And the fifth step is where we lance that thing and start getting the crap out. Okay? It's a very vulnerable, maybe the most vulnerable moment that any of us will be in our lives for the first time, that vulnerable with another human being, right? The successful consummation of us working these steps requires that we be that vulnerable, that humble, that honest, that courageous. And I like how Megan said she's somebody that believes that you can have faith and fear at the same time, because for me, that's kind of what the fourth and fifth step is. There's a lot of that going on. I just want to read this really quickly. I'm going to let Hunter take it over here. But I had a a white bison elder meditation of the day that came up earlier this week, and I'm like, we're going to read that. I don't know how y'all work with God, but God and I just kind of talk. It's like, ooh, do that on Saturday. Okay, I will. Right? The old people say, learn from your mistakes. So I try to accept everything for what it is and to make the best of each situation one day at a time. Sounds cliche to A, doesn't it? Dr. A.C. Ross, Ehenemai, Lakota. The Creator did not design us to beat ourselves up when we make mistakes. Mistakes are our friends. It is from mistakes that we learn. The more mistakes we learn from, the faster we gain wisdom. The faster we gain wisdom, the more we love. The more we love, the fewer our mistakes. Therefore, mistakes help us to learn love. God is love. Mistakes are sacred and help us learn about God's will for ourselves. Great Spirit, help us today to learn from our mistakes.
Hey, y'all, I'm Hunter. I'm a heroin addict. Yeah, this is my first time ever talking about the fifth step. I've never even led a discussion on it, but in my experience, it is a very important step. And, you know, thinking back on this topic, my first attempt at anything like a fifth step, it was not a fifth step, but it was close, was actually in treatment. And one of the exercises they had us do, this was probably the best thing that I learned from this treatment center. They didn't really offer a solution to the problem. They just made you look at the problem. And we basically wrote out our life story going all the way back to our early childhood. And I discovered something in that process that I wasn't really conscious of. You know, when I wrote this life story out, one of the things we also had to do with writing it out is read it in front of a group of people, like a big classroom. And writing it out was kind of hard, but when I got to reading it, we got about halfway through and I couldn't even finish. And I started crying in the middle of reading this story in front of all these people. I threw the paper down and I walked out of the classroom, and my trainer at the time had to follow me out and come sit down and talk with me. And in that moment, I realized not only how much I hated my life, but how much my past still affected me tremendously to that day. And I think that the fourth and the fifth step is about moving on from our past, you know, because we come in here holding on to all this stuff and, you know, believing things that happened way back then and thinking they're still true today, and they're really not. I had no solution and no way to move through any of that stuff on my own. You know, in the fourth and the fifth step, there's a line in the big book that says we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient, and that is my experience to a T. The same crazy mind is not going to fix the same crazy minds. It's just not. And that's why one of the things we're trying to achieve here in working the 12 steps is a shift in consciousness. And one of the things I found is I cannot achieve that on my own power. I needed somebody else that had already achieved that shift in consciousness to help shift my consciousness. And that's really what I'm doing in the fifth step, is I'm sharing the stuff and with somebody that knows what I'm talking about, that's been where I've been and also been on the other side, and they're going to help me see what I cannot see. That's the importance of doing a fifth step. And when I look at this subject, it seemed like for me living life was like there was always this lingering smell of shit. And I always thought it was these other people around me. Like, I really did. I always, like, man, there's always people around me that just smell like shit, you know? And it would piss me off. Doing the fourth and the fifth step was like finding out that I'm the guy that smells like shit. That's what it was like. For real. And, you know, it's very freeing to have that experience, but at the same time, it's humbling. Like, there's a part of me that really doesn't like it. You know, the big book talks about it. They said they didn't like the fourth step, the fifth step, or the sixth step. In my experience, I've done many fifth steps. I've never liked doing a fifth step, ever. I've never woken up early in the morning and been like, oh man, I just can't wait to read this fifth step to somebody today. I'm just on fire to go read this fifth step. Never. Like, every time I go into it, it's really uncomfortable. And my first sponsor, he did something that made it a little bit easier. He's like, have you ever had sex with another man? I was like, no. And he's like, have you ever had sex with an animal? I was like, no. And he's like, all right, this should be pretty easy. You know? It did make it a little bit better. It did, you know? But it was still uncomfortable because this is stuff that, honestly, I was going to take to my grave. I wasn't going to share this crap with anybody. I thought it was embarrassing. I thought it was weird. And I already feel like I'm and think that I'm different from other people and I'm not good enough. So I'm definitely not going to share this stuff, you know? But I'm glad I did, you know, because once I shared it with him, it made it easier to share it with other people. That's not saying that I run around telling everybody my life story and what I've been through, but sometimes I feel led to share certain facts about myself with certain people at certain times. I never know when, and I do now. And I think the fourth and the fifth step had something to do with that. There's a line in the big book that says, our dark past becomes the greatest asset we have. And for me, the dark past is not just the drinking and drugging. The dark past for me goes into these things that happened to me way back in the day, early on in childhood. All this stuff that I thought was weird and made me different that I wasn't going to share with other people, like being adopted and having a mom that smoked crack and being put in special education and being made fun of and picked on and going through school, building this kind of defense mechanism and this wall that I was unconscious of, thinking that no one really likes me, and basically me creating myself to not connect with anybody and not like anybody, you know? And then basically I was the type of guy that I could be in a room full of people and still feel all alone, you know, completely isolated but around a bunch of people. And once I did this fifth step, that started to dissipate. Not 100%, but in levels, it definitely did, you know. And, you know, when it says the fifth step, what that step actually says, it says, hold on, let me get into this book right here. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted God to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. Really, that's what I'm trying to do in the fifth step, is get down to the exact nature. You know, it's one thing to know that you were afraid. It's one thing to know that you were pissed off. But what exactly does that look like for you? You know, I need to see, you know, I've done... Let me go back into the fourth step. I've written fourth step the regular AA traditional way, which is great. I've also written it Theater of the Lie, which goes way deeper and it gives you a much more experiential experience with the third column in particular. You know, and both are great, but the main thing that I need to see is that I'm the one creating my own problems and how exactly am I doing that. And both fourth steps can make that happen. You know, and for me, what it looked like for me was I create my own fear, which creates my own fear, which creates more fear, which eventually creates experiences and actions, which is creating all my problems, which the problems are the fear and the resentments, you know. But I needed to see that I was the one making that happen, that I need to see exactly how am I selfish. You know, it's one thing for Joe Blow to be over there in the chair saying selfishness is and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles. And then because I want to fit in, I heard one of you guys' answers. Now I'm going to be over here saying it too. It's one thing to do that and actually do the work in the big book and see exactly how you're selfish. It's completely different. You know, and... there's some more stuff in here. There's so much stuff in the fifth step. Even though it's like a few pages, there's some really deep stuff in here. Let me jump back up here right quick. It says, we've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. That's really what we're doing here in the fifth step. And then it tells you why we're doing it. It's not just to have a better life and to be successful. The main objective really is to get a new attitude and a new relationship with my Creator. Because the obstacles in my path and the delusions that I believe and all this fear that's just consuming me and running my life it keeps me from connecting to God until I do this work. And there's another line here that I think is really important. It says, "More than most people, the alcoholic or the addict leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it." So for me, I definitely did that, but I was unaware that I was doing that because I wanted so desperately to be approved by other people that I would do what I thought they wanted me to do, and I would try and be how I thought they wanted me to be. And until doing this work, I was unconscious of that. That's the problem. So, which really meant that I was dishonest all the time. I was never real. I was never who I really was because I was always so caught up and busy trying to be who I thought you wanted me to be. And that's a hard way to live. It really is, because you have to keep up with so much. And eventually you end up hating yourself because you're not being real. You're always trying to win approval from other people and being not your true self. And doing the work and diving into the fifth step like really brings all that stuff up. It really shows you how you're doing it, how you're being one guy over here, one guy over there. You act differently at work than you do in AA or HA. You act differently at home than you do at work or whatever the case is, you know? And because one of the objectives of this program for me is to get me to be able to be of service, not just in AA, CA, and HA, but in all areas of my life. And for me, being of service means One principle in that is being honest and being real and being authentic. So for me, I need to learn how to be authentic in all areas of my life. And I think that the fifth step plays a major role in that. And I'm going to turn it back to Nathan.
Raise your hand if you have not ever done a fifth step. Okay. If you don't mind, out of the guys that raised their hand, how many of you guys have relapsed? Okay. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking or using. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. They have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk or high. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they failed. How many people have done a fifth step and then relapsed? Did you leave something out of the fifth step? 73, sorry. Yeah, we're on page 73 here into action. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but they hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. They had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary, until they told someone else all their life story. I think that's why rehabs have you write out the story. But getting up in front of an audience and reading my life story does not allow for that intimacy of the spirit to come through another person who has not lived my life, so they don't have the attachment of emotions that I do to all this terrible stuff that I did. Right? That's why I need someone else, hopefully who has already done this, right, to take me through this. If there's a huge, I think, truth to life that we learn in this program, that all of my problems are of my own making, then that means there's something inside of me that is a problem. And what I would spend my life doing is looking outside of me as the reason why my problem was there, and also for my solution. So my dad throwing me around a room when I'm in second grade, that's why I'm fucked up, right? My mom being too hard on me, you know, a coach one time throwing a ball rack and breaking it on my leg. Wasn't his fault I got in the way. Honestly, it wasn't. Right? But I have all these different memories of how I've been wrong. And the truth of the matter is, if something really did happen to me, because I realize, and I want to be sensitive to this, I realize that there are people in the audience who have been molested. I realize there are probably people in the audience who have been raped. How are we going to transmute that pain to love? Could you consider the fact that maybe things were done to you that were out of your control so that you could be an instrument of spirit to help other people through the same exact shit that you went through? And you can't get there unless you do this, the Word. Right? That's why, you know, I was taught a while back that when I'm going to take another guy through this, I kind of go ahead and lay out, have you committed murder? Have you molested anyone? Have you been molested? Have you raped someone? Have you been raped? Have you been a party to armed robbery? I ask about sexual behavior, because typically those are going to be the things that somebody's going to take to their grave. And then what I'm also really quick and ready to do is give them an example of me doing one of those things, because I do have that in my history. And I explain to the guy, this is the level of vulnerability that we both need to have with each other in this process. The really cool thing about it from somebody who's sponsoring is, I may not look forward. You don't look forward to saying a fist up? A lot of sponsors aren't exactly looking forward to sitting down for hours with you on a Saturday. Right? They're not. But this is another one of those almost every single time moments of before the workout or before some terrible thing that's going to make you better. And then you come out the other side, you just kind of come buzzing with what has gone on between you and another man or another woman, if that be the case. So to open that up and kind of start it at, this is where we got to get, I think does a service for you as a sponsor and for the person that you're taking through. I know of a guy that I took him through and everything, and he relapsed real quick afterwards. Then he came back, and it was right after we had started getting, I think we had done the fifth step. And the first question I said is, what did you not tell me? And he said, when I was 9, me and another little kid fondled each other. Boom. I mean, it was immediate. Came out of it. I think he's still sober today. He moved out of state and I hadn't heard from him in a while. May not be. But I know he was able to put more time together after that. These are difficult things. But these are also the things that, on this side of it, my dad and I have a fine relationship. I don't go and hang out with him so much because he lives in a pretty dark sort of way of living. And there's only so much time right now that I can spend with him without kind of being dragged down into that too. But when I think of my father, I don't have PTSD of wanting to beat the shit out of him. Right? That's gone. And that's amazing to me. I'd be driving down the highway for my job and this just, boom, back on me. It's gone, y'all. I can't fire that now. I was sitting last night with friends. My typical MO on a Friday night is, I'm going to go home and eat something and go to bed. But friends that are not us, that I've known since 7th grade, were saying, hey, we're getting food and we're going to watch the game. Would you come out? My first inclination was, I just want to go home and sleep. And then I was like, yeah. So I go and I find out that one of my friends, a lady, she's recently broken up with her boyfriend because he was physically abusive to her and he cheated on her. The old me would go, let's go get this motherfucker. I couldn't fire that because the first thought that came up in my mind was, I've done that. I've done that. Who am I to judge this guy? You know? The scariest things I've done being sober almost always are the most beautiful things that happen. That this reality of there being really, literally, however it works, God around and in us at all times, It happened for me when I went through a very long fifth step with my sponsor. He was good enough to let me tell the sob stories and all that instead of just getting me through it, right? But there is also this weight, this power that these seemingly dark things have over you, that just by speaking it, it loses its effect. Then later that's going to be so vital for our tenth step work. If I have this bond with another human being in that fifth step, right? Of course I'm going to call them up when I'm having problems with something in my runabout day, right? And if I don't, and this typically happens, if I don't, and I try to think about it and figure my way out of it, I experience pain. The moment that I pray, God, what should I do? Call Brandon, talk. Usually, there's times I've gone into it like wanting to hit something and I come out laughing, right? Because for Brandon, he's not the guy sitting there with all the past with this person. He can look at it objectively. I can't. That's all I got right now.
All right. He touched on a lot of great stuff right there. I want to read something right quick out of the fifth step promises. It's going to recap what he just said. But it says it right there in the fifth step promises. It says, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing.
That's right.
You know, it gives you a clear-cut direction in those promises. You're not going to experience this stuff until you take that step, withholding nothing. I mean, letting it all out. And that doesn't mean that you can't have a thought that says, oh, I don't want to say this, or I probably shouldn't say this. That means you probably should, if you have that thought. And I've had it every time I've read a fifth step. There's been stuff I didn't want to read. Particularly this last one was actually one of the hardest ones I read. And it was at like 3 years clean. And it was something that popped up on the sex inventory, and I was with a group of men. So another thing that my third sponsor taught me to do is to read my fifth steps with multiple people. So I've read the fifth step so many different ways. I've read it in group settings. I read it with setting it up with three separate people on three separate occasions to read it with all three of them. I've read it to women. Of course, I've read it to men. And one of the things I was reading to these two guys, and something cropped up on my sex part of the inventory, and I did not want to read this at all, man. I absolutely did not want to read it, because once you've done this work and you've grown and matured spiritually, when you resort back to doing things that you used to do, now it's like there's this spiritual conviction when you do that stuff. That happens. That wasn't there before. Because back in the past, if I would have done this, I wouldn't have cared at all, honestly.
Now it's intolerable. Like, it fucks you up.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like, because there was stuff people were like, oh, I was so sorry about all this stuff I did. When I walked in, a lot of this stuff that I did in the past, I really didn't even care about, honestly. I was a messed up guy when I got here, for sure. And I was not worried or didn't care about making amends either when I first got here, you know? But that is something that I've done, and I think that's one of the reasons why I'm still here. But reading this, man, I had this experience where I was like, damn, like, this is absolutely not okay. This is, like, I never want to do this again. I never want to feel this again. I never want to be this guy ever again. Because this work has, and God as a result, has changed me and my life dramatically. You know, and going back to that, I know that everything happens for a reason. You know, if God's everything, then he was that too. And I was supposed to do that, obviously, what I did. And it definitely, you know, helped me grow. But it was coming back to the fourth step and fifth step and looking at it again, and seeing that, damn, I can't believe I did that, you know? I really can't. Because I harmed a bunch of people. Well, a few people in that process. And it doesn't feel good anymore. And, well, I'm not going to say that it felt good ever to harm people. But I was unable at certain times to care about whether I harmed people or not. And today I actually do. And I think the fifth step played a gigantic role in that. Once you take a look at the way you've been treating people and the things that you've done to other people and like how you really messed some stuff up, you really have. Like, I remember when I first got clean, and this is how like asleep I am, or new people are in general, but particularly me, you know, when I first got here, my dad had gotten up from the table from eating and he'd gained a bunch of weight. And I looked at my mom and I was like, what's going on? Is everything with the business okay? Is everything in the marriage okay? And she looked at me and she's like, yeah, that's fine, but it's you. You know, when you're out there overdosing and staying in these hotels and turning your phone off and no one gets in touch with you and no one hears from you and knows where you're at, we can't sleep. It's messing our diet up. It's just messing our lives up, you know? In that moment, like, we talk about this thing where, you know, you get split wide open or something in you shifts, you know, whatever it is, you know. I realized that I did not want to do that to people anymore in that moment. And you come up against that again, hopefully, in the fifth step. When you take a look and see what you touched on, basically, I'm a hypocrite. All this stuff that I don't like about other people, I do. And I might do it more than them. And for some reason, I walk around like it's okay for me to do it, but it's not okay. Damn you if you ever do it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do it. I'll do it right in front of you. But if you do it, man, screw you. You know? And once you like really tap into that, it's just like, I've literally been sitting there writing four steps, and then the theater of the lie will really help you do this. Like, that, writing that inventory will really help you see on some level what if sharing a fifth step will with other people. You'll be sitting there, and you might start laughing at yourself because you can't believe that you're writing this crap. Like,
yep.
You know, and I think that ties into this. It can be so real in my head, the stuff that's going on. Like, I can literally believe this stuff to my grave. Like, I can think this is ultimately the absolute truth. You voice it. I call up Nathan and I voice it out. And it's just like, wait a second. How the hell did I think that was possible? That's what's going to happen. You know? The mind is a very, very powerful thing. It really is, you know, and it can go one way or the other. It can be very destructive or it can be amazing and beautiful, you know. And the fifth step was like really one of the key factors in the transformation from being destructive and dark to being beautiful and light with my change of mind. And with that, I think I'll pass it back to Nathan.
I think on page 73, and I'm going to flip over to 75, but if you look at 73, and Megan and Brandon were talking about this with the four step, the first full paragraph there, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. They're very much the actor to the outer world. They present their stage characters. This is the one they like their fellows to see. They want to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in their heart they don't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things they do on their sprees. Coming to their senses, they are revolted at certain episodes they vaguely remember. These memories are a nightmare. They tremble to think someone might have observed them. As fast as they can, they push these memories far inside themselves. They hope they will never see the light of day. They are under constant fear and tension that makes for more using and drinking. Y'all, every now and then I ride down the road now and go, I hadn't had fear and tension in a while, like a good long while. Mm-hmm. So now the norm is peace, fear and tension. It's not bad. It's God's way of letting me know, hey, got to talk. Talk to me. Right? What is this? I don't know. Call so-and-so. What is this? Well, remember when your mom did that back when you were five? Oh, yeah, that triggers that deep down thing right there. Okay, thanks. It's gone. Constant contact with God comes as we do this stuff. Then flip over to 75. If that's the one end going into the fifth step, coming out of the fifth step, once we have taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. I would have said bullshit to that. I never, even before I started drinking and using, liked being alone with myself at all. Now I prefer it a lot of times. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. I was at a meeting earlier today that's at a church that I go to, and I was saying to a few of the guys, well, all the guys there happen to be Christian as well. And I said, you know, it took the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to get me to experience the Bible. I'd read the Bible. There were words. There was an idea. I could think about it, but not to experience the Spirit that is in that book. And I also start picking up the Quran. And I start picking up all these other books from other practices and religions. And I start to find out, man, we are way more alike than we are different. Way, way more. Right? But it took the big book to unblock everything, because I have actual actions and practices that I can do that are laid out. Right? Okay. One thing that, from the sponsor standpoint, if I can't hear defects of character and what the person's reading me, that I'm not doing my job as a sponsor. There has to be a list after this fifth step is done for the person to take with them, most likely sit for an hour, look at that, because the way I've been taught, you launch after third step, right? You get through the fourth step. You do the fifth step. You sit for an hour. I mean, unless you've been holding something back that you need to talk about, you better go ahead and do that sixth and seventh step. Because it's time to start the list of amends, which this fourth and fifth step is going to give you, right? The sponsor's also listening the whole time for, okay, they know that he knows he harmed Ashley. What about Ashley's parents, Ashley's brothers and sisters, Ashley's cousins? Man, my men's list gets long, right? But there's something really cool that happens. I know somebody's going to be covering the eighth and the ninth step, but you know, one of the biggest things that I was always worried and scared of, I'd gotten the good idea when I went to Ridgeview back in 08 that you know, my marriage was shattered. She had cheated on me, so in my mind it was okay, I guess, to meet a really pretty woman who's also in the C unit with me at Ridgeview. And, hey, I know what's been wrong, especially when I was diagnosed with, like, you know, depression and maybe some drinking problems. For me, I heard the depression, I was like, that's a problem, right? And we decide we're going to go and we're going to, her husband, you know, he's abusive. I'm judging him, of course. He's there for family day. We're avoiding, you know, I'm avoiding seeing him. She comes and moves in with me and my roommate from Ridgeview at the time. Made sense. We'd already relapsed by that point. My roommate from Ridgeview was a cocaine guy. Got to be a crackhead while living there with me. And I even got to dabble a little bit in crack. Found out that it is not my master, thank God. The lady was able to drink her vodka every day the way she did. And I was able to smoke weed, drink, and then when I could get my Adderall, that'd be the nice little trifecta for me. And eventually she moved out. And eventually, y'all, she ended up killing herself. And So, you know, I do this work and it's like, oh, shit, I got to go make amends to her husband. I know we're supposed to be talking about the fifth step, but this ties in, right? My sponsor knows the gravity of this scar on my soul, on my psyche, on me, right? I talk to him before I'm going to go make that amends, right? I had this amends. We sit down at Willie's. I just passed at Willie's this morning and had this memory. That's why I'm probably talking about it right now, right? We sit in there. We talk. The first thing I said to him was, I just thought you'd probably want to kick my ass. And he goes, well, I did. And he said, but I don't anymore. And we talked for at least an hour. I was able to answer a lot of questions for him that he had unanswered about why she had taken her own life. Right. And at the end of it, the guy goes, Nathan, you're a really good guy. And that fucked me up in a good way, but it fucked me up, right? That would have definitely been the last thing in the world that I would have wanted to do. Go talk to this man who I helped to contribute to helping shatter his life. And for that to come out the other side. But see, I get to practice in that fifth step, telling the things I don't want to tell. I get to practice trusting God. That what's going to happen on the other side of it is going to be a really, really good thing. And even if it's a painful thing on the other side, y'all, pain goes away. It does. It doesn't seem like it right in the middle of it. And it's not pleasant to be in. But something T told me early on this time was, are you okay not being okay? Because pretty much, a lot of times I can go to bed and the next morning it's gone. But if I'm just wallowing in shit, like, you know, sitting on a four-step and not finishing it because I don't want to go tell somebody everything, I'm going to keep having that cyst is going to keep bubbling up before it's got to pop. I think that's it for me right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me just to talk about the fifth step alone. Because just the fifth step alone is insufficient in my experience. Even though it is an important step, I'm not neglecting that. What I'm really looking at or sharing in the fifth step is the internal unmanageability. That's the unmanageability that I see when they're talking in the first step. It's not external. It's not losing cars and losing houses and bad bank accounts. You know, it's like the relationships and the stuff that goes on in my mind and the way that I treat people and the things that I believe, basically. And that's what we're really getting down to in the fourth and fifth step. Hopefully, I walk out of a fifth step with a bunch of beliefs that have created all my problems, you know. There was one in particular, and this is funny. I used to get resentful at this old coworker of mine because he'd be lifting these boxes. We had to unload this truck, and he would make all these sounds when he was lifting these boxes. And I was just like, man, it's like, dude, like these boxes are not that heavy. Like, just fucking pick it up and put it over there. Like, you don't have to grunt and make these sounds while you're doing it. Like, they weigh like 30 pounds, you know? It wasn't until writing inventory I found out why I was getting resentful at that. You know, it just left to my own devices. I don't see it. But what it was is that this guy was being authentic with his struggle. He was struggling to carry these boxes, and he was sharing the sound that he made with the struggle. And I believe that real men hide their struggle.
That's right. That's right.
You don't fucking make those sounds. Right. I don't care how hard it is.
You're pissing
me off.
You have a nice stick. You have a nice sticking out of you, and it's like you just keep going.
Right.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. That blew me away when I saw that.
Yeah.
And it was sharing the fifth step actually with Terry that I discovered that. And it was funny at the same time. It's just like, wow, man. It had nothing to do with him at all. It was all me. That's how that problem, a simple little cheesy resentment that wasn't even that big of a deal, but that's a simple example of how that was all my issue, all my problem, of my own making. And ultimately, the fifth step is about gaining awareness so we can operate in 10. You don't want to just throw me into the 10th step my second day coming in here. I don't know what I'm really looking for. I don't know what's going on. You know, the fifth step generates this awareness of what's going on. And do I still miss it? Yeah, absolutely. But I see a lot of it today, I'll tell you that much. I've done this many times, and I can pretty much, for the most of the time, see what's going on. And once you have this awareness, and you're able to watch yourself, and by that I mean you're able to watch your own thoughts as they happen in your mind, the resentments and the fear lose their power. They can't stand because you're seeing it. You know what it actually is. When I was unconscious to it, as it talks about in the fourth step, it drove me around. Mm-hmm. Or in the third step, I think it's talking about that. That stuff drove me around. And there was not a damn thing I could do about it. So in my experience, I think it's pretty important. If this step generates the ability to possibly do stuff that's driving you around, potentially to your death, maybe you should do this step. That's what I think. And I'm glad I did, man, because as a result of this step and all the other ones, you know, that's what I was saying. It's hard for me to just talk about one step because they all work together. They all tie into each other. Everyone's like prepping you up to do something, to be able to do something else, you know. But as a result of this process, including the fifth step, the way that I live and experience life is dramatically different. This is not just come in here and get a minimum wage job and pay your bills and come to a meeting and whine about a couple problems here and there. You know, you actually get to live a quality life if you do this work. A life that you won't even believe you're living sometimes. That's how good it can get.
I was going to say, if you go to meetings where it's not like that, they're probably not talking about the book or God. You know, yeah, I agree with that completely. Yeah, when I came in here, I lived in a home by myself that had a chair that was ripped up by my pit bull Diva, and there was her dog crap all on the floor, and I had a bed. That was about it. I mean, I was at the point of either I was going to go get into harder drugs to make this stuff stop, right? Or I was going to kill myself. And there's a moment where I was launched off this chair and said an expletive written prayer that I didn't mean to pray. And it basically had to do with, I fucking hate myself. If you're real, what do I do? I've always hated myself. And the first thought that came in was, go see Brandon and Terry and get sober. And the inside part of me went, okay, yes. I couldn't have made myself have that okay, yes. Something was going on there that was God. Now, I'll bring you back to something else, too, that happened this week, and I thought of y'all. I work at a little Christian school. By the way, the character, the stage character, I'd be the guy that would be teaching Bible history to middle school kids, this little nice little Christian school and everything. My bowl sitting in my console, right? And, no, I mean, I'm packing it in the parking lot. And as soon as I don't know why, I'd be off the campus. And I had this one street I turned right onto, pull up. I'm hitting that and everything was all right then. Which is the same thing that we read on 75. Right, we have to have something that's going to substitute for the thing we do, and this is it. But I had this lady come in to talk with our school, and she's a Rwandan genocide survivor. Happened when she was 27 years old. She's now 52. Her name's Marie Christine, right? And I'm sitting there talking to her. First of all, some of y'all are going to get this. When I drove her home after she spoke to our school, she said, Nathan, let's keep in touch. I need you, and we need to be in each other, fellowship of the spirit. I went, weird, right? But I asked her, I said, because her whole message was how to end all war, how to have world peace. And I said, how did you get compassion for the people that killed all of your family? And some of these people were friends of her family's, right? And she said it wasn't immediate, but she started talking this. She said, I realized that I could also hate people, and that people who end up being killers are first hateful. They're hateful toward other people, and they stop seeing them as human beings. Well, that's what I did the whole time. I was run by self-centeredness, right? And so this woman, just on her own with a very deep spiritual connection, right? It's her faith that eventually has brought her to this place where she goes and hangs out with Nobel Peace Prize winners, and her kids both go to some boarding school in Switzerland for like six figures each, all paid for, all this stuff, right? Because she follows God, right? And so I've gone from that feces-covered floor to a life now where I just recently probably signed for a job that I never thought I would have had. I never would have had the job if that moment on the floor hadn't happened, if I hadn't gone all the way through and done the fifth step, done the amends, and done everything else. It's easy. It feels difficult. It is difficult, but you got other people that have been in here and it hasn't killed them. Right? We trudge it together. But the fifth step is one of those that nobody wants to go through. And it separates the adults from the children in the program. It does. And there's a lot of times you go to meetings and you can tell there's a lot of people in the room that has not done a fourth or fifth step. And so for those of us that have had this awakening, when we go to those types of meetings, I'm real quick to be looking for the person who is in pain and is asking for help in their own way. And then all they hear is a bunch of, I got the minimum wage, you know, and I'm good because I stopped drinking. And that's just ignorance. I'm not trying to be condescending. The people still think that their problem is the drink or the drug, and they don't believe that your life can completely be recreated into something that you could never have dreamed of, right? And so for those people who are in pain, getting them into the book and getting them linked up with people who've had this experience, that's also why you're there.
You know, in my experience with the fifth step, one of the main principles, I think, step five is really trying to help me acquire is forgiveness. You know, and I didn't forgive anybody I found when doing the fourth and fifth step who had harmed me in the past. But yet I continued to harm other people. That ties back into the hypocrisy. But one, you know, the holding on to that stuff, it harms me more than I think it harms them. Like, for some reason, it's like on some level, I think that by me not forgiving these people, it's like doing something to them. They don't even really know it. You know, it's just harming me. It's just making me upset. It's making me rethink about this stuff. And forgiveness is something that, you know, I try and still practice today. Because once you do forgive, you become free. And I think that's what a lot of this work is about, is learning how to be free, learning how to be ourselves. I'll tell you, that is definitely one of the things the fifth step helped me do, is just be me, you know, which ties into discussing the still things that can still, on some level, be embarrassing still today. But I can discuss them with other people when the time is right. That's not saying I'm running around telling everybody everything, because I don't. But certain times I will disclose things that happened to me. And one of the things I've discovered in all this stuff is that I'm not alone. There's no experience out there that I'm the only one that's gone through it. There's somebody else that has gone through it too. And I believe, like, on some level, after doing this work, we're kind of owed disclosing ourselves to other people.
Yeah.
So they can get free too. Because some people will literally take this stuff to their death, and it will kill them. Because they don't think that there's any way of getting past it.
Do you ever have the experience when you're doing a fifth step with a guy where they come, and I mean, and it's scary, and you can see it in their face that it's like, I'm about, and they say this big thing that they think is so terrible. Do you ever laugh at them or giggle a little bit, only because I've done that exact same thing? And yeah. How many times I get lined up specifically with men that have done the same thing, and when they can see that, yeah, I've done that dark, terrible thing that you just said, that's why I laugh. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, that all the people in the world and universe, we line up.
And it's normally not even that bad, is it? Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. It may be. But most cases, it's not.
Yeah, that's right.
In our head, it's way worse than it actually is.
That's right. I had one other little small reading. We might be done here. I'm not sure. But this was in one of the devotionals I read this morning. Do nothing without the counsel of God. When we take stock of our past, we recoil from many of the memories. So I honestly didn't cherry pick this. This was this morning. In some instances, we felt victimized. In others, we were the perpetrators. Whoever was the culprit in each situation failed to seek the counsel of God. Had the voice of the Spirit been sought, the hurtful act would have never been committed. It's possible that we can act in a loving manner even when we fail to seek proper guidance. We can't be certain, however, that we are doing so. Thus, the safest avenue is to ask for the Spirit's wisdom and then wait. It will always come. It will always come, but not necessarily as quickly as we think we need it. That's what often triggers the ego to get into the act. Its impatience moves us to force control, and unfortunate outcomes result. God promises that we'll move through our experiences safely, and that we'll learn what we need from them if we choose God as our companion. Life can be satisfying when we journey in good company. And it takes good company, like the people in this room and the God that is deep down within them, to join with the God that's deep down within me, so that I get to have a really fucking kick-ass life, selfishly. But then also get to be used to get other people this same way of life. And the fifth step we just read is vital. Bite the bullet and do it fully. Right? Thank y'all. That's all I got.
All right, we're going to come back in 10 minutes.